Today we're going to learn Daf Kaf Tet of Masechet Tamid. We're going to start at the Mishnah Kaf Chet Amud Bet at the beginning of the second parak. So if you remember, we ended with, and we're describing our whole, what goes on in the Beit HaMikdash, we ended with the Kohen was up doing the Trumat Hadesh, and if you remember in the beginning they couldn't see him, but now when he walks down the ramp to put the pile down at the bottom on the eastern side, because they're standing, if you remember, they're standing on the eastern side. Right, they're standing by the place where they made the chavitin. If you look at Shar Nicanor, okay, there's the little if you go a little bit south from Shar Nicanor, the entrance, there's the Lishkat Oseh Chavitin. Okay, that's where they are, and from there you can see right on the eastern side of the ramp. You can see where your vision is good. So Ra'u Achiv Sheyarad. So when they see him coming down the ramp, Hem Ratzimu Ba'im. So then they start running and coming in. So they go and they now wash their hands and their feet from the kior. They take shovels, because what's the issue? They couldn't take the kelim until they sanctify they wash their hands, because you can't touch klei kodesh until you do that. So they take the shovels and the tzinorot, or forks. We're going to see what they need them both for. Okay, they go now to the top of the mizbech. So now they take the parts of, if you remember, this is what happens overnight. Overnight in the Beit HaMikdash, there's no avodah done, but they take the body parts that are supposed to be burned from the animals and they leave them on the mizbech all night to burn. And when they get there in the morning, well, almost morning, it's not even morning yet, and they're not fully burned, so they take them off the mizbech. We'll see why, because what they really want to do, we'll see in a minute, is they want to get to the ashes. Can't get to the ashes unless you remove the stuff that's at the top of the fire. So right now they remove them. Soon they're going to bring them back, because they have to be burned entirely, so they're just going to remove them temporarily. And where do you put them? The problem is, if you put them on the floor of the azara, you can't do that, because why? There's what we call psulina. Things get disqualified overnight. But they won't get disqualified if you keep them on the mizbech. So they have to be somehow kept on the mizbech. Now remember, the mizbech had a lot of space. It was 30 by 30 amah. But theoretically, there were things going on at the top of the mizbech, and maybe there wasn't enough space. So first what they say is, solkin otan al tzidei mizbech. So they put them on the sides of the mizbech. But then they say, im ein tzadim machzikin, but if there's not enough space on the mizbech, then you want to move them somewhere else, but there's no room. It has to stay on the mizbech, because as soon as you put them on the floor, they'll be disqualified. Okay, they can only, it's kind of like tag, right? And if you're on base, you're okay, but if you get off base, you're stuck. So that's what this is like. You can't take them off the mizbech. So if there's no more room, where do you put them? So drim otam besovev ala kevesh. Now there's a bunch of ways to understand what this means. The sovev and the kevesh are two different parts. The kevesh is the ramp. So theoretically, some people say it either means the sovev or the kevesh, meaning you can put them either on the ramp or you can put it on the sovev. That was that part at six. Remember, the mizbech was 10 amot high. At the height of 6 amot, there was this amah that jutted out, right? It jutted out, and there was one amah's worth where people could stand called the sovev. It was right above the chudas sikra, which was at a height of 5 amot. And then under that, if you remember, there's another amah that juts out at the very bottom. That's the yesod, where they would pour the blood. So the sovev is this area. Okay, you can see it if you look at a picture of the mizbech. This one's not a great picture. There's other pictures in the mizbech where you see there's this area where you can walk around. Here you can see it. Okay, here's the mizbech, and here's this amah that jutted out that people could actually walk around there. So you have, you can put it now. So the question is, what does it mean by sovev ala kevesh? Some people say it's the area where the ramp overlaps the sovev. Since the sovev was a whole amah around, when the ramp comes out, the ramp overlaps, the first amah of the ramp is right above the sovev. So some people say that's what it means. Dafka over there, they would put it. Some people say it means either the ramp or the sovev. So now the question is, right, which, if it's either or and that's what it means, then which one was the first, where would you put it first? Is it first the sovev, and if you have no place there, you put it on the ramp, or the reverse? In any case, right, this is where they put the parts. Hechelu ma'alim ba'efer al gav tapuach. Now we get back to this tapuach. Remember, we had that a few weeks ago. We talked about that was the pile we learned about. This is the Trumat Hadeshem, where you take a little bit of the efer and you put it next to the mizbech. That we've already done. And then you would take the rest of the ashes and you put it in this pile on the mizbech. Get this good picture in the Koran where you can see the mizbech has, okay, the fire going, and then there's this big pile of ashes. Okay, so and if you remember, when the pile got too big, what would they do? They would do the mitzvah of Hotza'at HaDeshen, which was debated. Is it a mitzvah? Is it not a mitzvah? And you would take all the ashes outside of Yerushalayim. Okay, but at this point, they're just going on the pile. Tapuach haya be'emtza ha-mizbeach. Pa'amim shayu alav kishlosh me'ot kor. There were some times we had 300 kor. Okay, what's 300 kor? A kor is 30 se'ah. The volume of 30 se'ah is 240 to 480 liters, some sort of range there. We don't know exactly. Now, imagine 300 times that amount. Okay, we're going to see in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to say, I don't think we need the Gemara to tell us this. This is an exaggeration, right? Could you imagine 240 liters times, right, in the minimum shear, right, times 300, how much that would be, right? An insane amount. So it's obviously a bit of an exaggeration, but what are they saying? That there were times where there were so many korbanot that the ashes in one day, right, got up to that large amount. Ubargalim lo hayu medashnim oto. Dafka on the regel, they wouldn't sweep up the ashes. Why? Mipnei shehu noy lamizbeach. Because it looks nice for the mizbeach. Why does it look nice? You would think, ugh, ashes all over the mizbeach. But no, it's decorative for the mizbeach because it's a sign of how many sacrifices were brought on the mizbeach. Wow. Right? Think about on the regel, people brought all the korbanot regel, and then they brought all their nidarim and nidavot, because this is when they were coming to the Beit HaMikdash, so they were paying up all their promises that they had promised to the Beit HaMikdash. And, right, think about how many, right, it was amazing, so they wanted to leave it there as a show for how many sacrifices we did that day. Umiyamav lo nitatzel ha-kohen milotzi et ha-deshen. Okay, there's a bunch of ways to understand this, how this relates to the previous pasuk. Okay, the kohenim were never lazy. And they didn't, in other words, they would always take out the desh and they wouldn't be lazy about it. What does this have to do with being lazy? So they say, well, maybe you could be lazy about it because you could say, well, doesn't it look nice for the mizbeach to keep all the ashes? So they would say, so I just won't clean up today because it's better if I don't clean up. They wouldn't do that in general. Obviously, on the regel, they did. So the question is, how is this related? Some people say, dafka, on the regel, the reason why they didn't do it was because it was nice for the mizbeach and not because they were lazy. They're basically trying to say kohenim weren't lazy, and that wasn't the reason why they didn't take it out. So now they moved all the meat to the side, whatever was left, the bones and that kind of stuff, whatever was left, they moved it to the side in order to get to the ashes underneath. Now they took all the ashes out, they put it on this pile. Now before they put the Evarim Uptarim back on, what do they have to do? Well, every day there was a mitzvah, and this is why they had to remove the ashes and remove the meat, to make a new fire, okay? To bring new logs to the fire. Hechelu ma'alim b'gzirin. So they start bringing up the logs. L'sadera tamaracha. Now the Mishnah again asks the question, again a bit of a strange style, but more, you know, at least it matches the style of the previous parak. The chikola itzim kshirim lamaracha, or all types of logs. Can you bring any type of log you want from any tree? Hey, yes, in fact you can. Well, although we see we can't, but we'll see. Kol eitzim kshirim lamaracha chutz mishal gefen v'shal zayit. You can use any tree, any wood, except from a vine, a grapevine, and from an olive tree. We'll have to see this why later. Aval be'elu hayu regilim, but this is what they generally use. Even though everything else is okay, they generally use murbiot, that means young branches, shel te'ena, of figs, shel egoz, walnuts, v'shel etz shemen. Unclear exactly what that is. The Koran calls it pine wood. Some people say it's from a persimmon tree because they made balsam oil from there. Okay, some sort of other tree. Sidir et ha-maracha gdola mizracha v'chazita mizracha. So now, there were two marachot, some people even say three or four, but the two main ones were the big maracha where they would burn all the meat. That would be on the eastern side of the mizbeach. V'chazita mizracha, and it faced mizrach. Okay, exactly what that means is unclear, how the fire is facing some direction. Different opinions about it. V'rashe gzerin ha-pnimim hayu nog'im ba-tapuach. And if you remember, the tapuach was in the emtza ha-mizbeach, so that's in the middle. This is more to the east, and the edges of the logs would touch the tapuach. It's interesting, in this picture you don't see that, but maybe it just means they're near the, right, they're near there, in other words, they're facing there. Bereva chaya ben agzerin, okay, they didn't make a pile of them all right next to each other, but they left some space. What would they do with that space? Shayumitzitina ta'alita misham. They would take little twigs the little pieces that they would put in between. They made some space in between so they could put these little, the chips that were for igniting the fire. So they needed space to put those because those are the ones with which they ignited the fire. Now, they take, after they set up this maracha, they take these nice fig tree logs, sider et maracha shnia lektoret, and from there, they would now set up the second maracha. What was the second one for? So the first one is for all the korbanot. The second one is for the ktoret. They would take, if you remember, the mizbeach ktoret was inside the hechal. They would take from here for the ktoret, from the maracha shnia. Okay, it seems clear on Yom Kippur they had a separate maracha just for, if you remember, that's where the Kohen Gadol, he takes the machta, right, the pan, he takes the chalim from the maracha and he brings it into the Kodesh Kodeshim. So he does the second maracha for the ktoret, so now we have a separate, smaller one. Keneged pina maravit romit, mashuach min hakeren klapei tzafon arba amot. Okay, so now he would take, where was this maracha? It was on the southwestern corner, okay? But then you would move from, in other words, if you go to the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach, and then you'd move, right, so you're in that corner, okay? Imagine, right, this is the Mizbeach, the ramp goes out toward the, remember, it was a whole debate, and this is, affects exactly why we're here. Where the Mizbeach was placed in the room, was it all in the Tzafon, or was it partly in the Darom, if you remember? So if you hold that it was all in the Tzafon, that means the Mizbeach took up exactly half the room. So that means that if you're in this corner, that's the southern corner, since the Mizbeach is all in the north, then the southern corner is right opposite what? The entrance to the Hechal. Okay? And it says in the Pasuk, it has to be Lifnei Hashem. You have to take Melo'a Chalim, Melo'a Machteg Achalei Esh Me'al HaMizbeach Mi Lifnei Hashem. So that's why they put this Maracha Mamash opposite the entrance to the Hechal. So that you, it's because the Pasuk says Mi Lifnei Hashem. So therefore, it would be near this corner, but they didn't want to put it right on the corner, so they moved it 4 amot north, right, north from the corner. Okay, just off the edge, 4 amot. And that's where this smaller maracha stood. Now, how much, and that's how big was it, how much ash did it need to create, or how many coals did it need to create? The assumption was that their coals, not like our coals, but the fire would basically turn into the coals. And they said, Be'omed, here it's weird, they use Be'omed with an ayin, but it really means with an aleph. Sometimes this happens, aleph and ayin switch. Omed is an estimation. Chamesh se'im chalim. You needed it to create about 5 se'im of chalim, right? That's the same shiur we saw before, of se'ah. We saw a kor before. This is se'im, which is 30 se'im to a kor. So you needed 5 se'im worth of chalim. And that's because that's how much you needed for the ketoret. Remember, they did the ketoret once in the morning, once in the evening. U'b'Shabbat be'omet shmona se'in chalim. Why? Shasham ayu notnim shnei b'zichei levona shalechem apanim. Because if you remember, there were the frankincense, the bowls of frankincense that went with the lechem apanim. And on Shabbat, when they switched the lechem apanim, they burned the frankincense. Ha'evarim v'apdarim shelo nitaklu miba'erev. So now we take these parts, machzirin otan l'maracha. So now that we have the maracha all set up, we put those parts back on the maracha, and then ve'itzitu shtei marachot be'esh. And then you light them both on fire. Yardu uva'u lehem l'lishkat ha'gazit. Now they all go down from the mizbeach. And they go to Lishkat HaGazit. Okay, look on your map. You'll see where Lishkat HaGazit is. It's on the northeastern side of the Azara. Okay, in fact, according to this map, it's mostly in Ezra Kohanim, but a little bit juts into Ezra Israel on the eastern side. Okay, the Lishkat HaGazit, you remember what they're famous for? That's where the Sanhedrin sits. Okay, that's not why they're going there now, though. They're going there because that's where they're going to do the rest of the lotteries for what, who does what in the Beit HaMikdash that day. Okay, starting with the Gemara. Amar Rava Guzma. Okay, this is an exaggeration that there were 3 mil core of ashes on the Beit HaMikdash. Hishku et hatami b'kosh shel zahav. Amar Rava Guzma. And the next Mishnah we're going to see that when they took the keves, the sheep, to sacrifice for the Korban Tamid, they gave the sheep some water to drink from a golden cup. Comes Rav and he says, that's also an exaggeration. They don't drink from golden, right? They didn't give the sheep to drink from golden cups. Okay? So those two things are exaggerations. Amar Rabbi Ami, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibru Nevi'im Lashon Havai, Dibru Chachamim Lashon Havai. Okay, so now Rabbi Ami comes and says, we see this form of exaggeration in the Torah, in the Nevi'im, and in the rabbis. They all spoke in exaggerated language. Now we're going to see where. Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dechtiv, Arim Gedolot Ubitzurot Bashamayim. Okay, this pasuk actually appears twice. The one, the Torah, or here tells us it's the pasuk from Dvarim Perak Aleph when Moshe's recounting the Meraglim. Okay, so they said, Anachnu olim, anachnu olim achenu hemasu el vavenu lemor am gadol v'rami menu arim v'dolot u'b'tzurot b'shamayim. V'gam b'nei anakim ra'inu sham. Moshe quotes it in the name of the Meraglim. This is what the Meraglim said. Okay, that they're a huge nation, right? They have big cities that are fortified to the heavens. Cities aren't fortified to the heavens. That's crazy. But it's interesting that pasuk also appears in Devarim Perek Tet when Moshe's talking to the people and he says, Shema Yisrael, we're now about to go into the land, and he describes the land where there are these huge cities and the Betzura B'Shamayim. It's interesting that Moshe uses the same language. Okay, so the question is which one they're quoting here. It seems more likely that they're quoting Moshe Rabbeinu as having exaggerated, because the Meraglim, we know the whole story was an exaggeration. But even when Moshe uses this language and he exaggerates, that's even more interesting. Okay, Dibru, so therefore, Bashamayim Sakadatach, what, you think these cities are fortified to the heavens? Ela Guzma, it must be exaggeration. Dibru Chachamim Lashon Havai, where did the rabbi speak Lashon Havai? Hada Amaran. Tapuach, v'yishkuet ha-tami b'kol shel zahav, right? Those are the two places we saw. It's interesting, the Seder here, right? You would have thought Torah, Nevi'im, Chachamim, but for some reason the Chachamim comes before the Nevi'im. So one is the Tapuach, and one is the fact that they use this golden cup to let the sheep drink. Tibru Nevi'im Lashon Havai, where does that come up? Dichtiv, in Sefer Melachim, when it discusses the coronation of Shlomo, it says, Ve'alu kol ha'am acharav, v'ha'am mechalalim b'chalalim. So when they coronated Shlomo, it says, everybody went behind him, and they were mechalalim b'chalalim, right? They were using musical instruments. Usmechim simcha gdola, batibaka ha'aretz b'kolam. And the ground cracked open because of their happiness and their singing and the music. Okay, so that's obviously an exaggeration. Amar Rabbi Yanai Bar Nachmani, Amar Shmuel. Okay, now we're going to have another opinion about this. Bishloshah mekomot dibru chachamim b'lashon havai. He says there's three places where the rabbi spoke in exaggerated language. Ve'elu hein, tapuach, gefen u'parochet. So notice what he doesn't mention here. He doesn't mention the koshel zahav. And he mentions two others. So they say, why did he say this? La fuki mi de Rava, because he disagreed with Rava. Ditnan ishkuet hatami b'kol shel zahav, v'amar Rava guzma. And that's what Rava said was an exaggeration. Kamash malan, he says, no, hani in hatablam. The fact that he says there's three places means only these three places, and he obviously thinks not this case. Why? Ein aniyut b'mkom ashirut. We've seen this a number of times regarding the mikdash. What does it mean? It means that the mikdash was a place of wealth. And when there's a place of wealth, there is no poverty there. Meaning, if people use kosot shel zahav, then they even had the keves drink from a kosot shel zahav. In the Beit HaMikdash, everything was done in a glorified manner and in a fancy way, and therefore even the kvasim drank from golden cups, and he didn't think that was an exaggeration. He thinks that's actually what went on there. Okay? So now what we have left to understand is, well, he said tapuach, we know what that is, tapuach hadamahan, but what about the gefen and the parochet? So this we already learned, but we'll learn it again. Gefen detanya, gefen zahav hayta omedet al petach haichal, umudle al gabei klunsaot. If you remember, they discussed this before, that there was this vine, a beautiful decorated vine that was made of gold, that decorated the entrance of the heichal. Umudle al gabei klunsaot, and it was kind of... what's the word? Like a gefen is mudle. It's
hanging.
Yeah, like hanging. You know, the way
draping.
Draping is the word I was thinking. Okay, draping on. What are klunsaot? What do they say? Draping on. Got it. Like I think hooks on the wall or something, right? Draped over something on the wall there. Okay. What does it say?
Suspended on poles.
Okay, on poles. Okay, they were suspended on poles. Bekol mi shemitnadev ale o gargir o eshkol. Anyone who would donate to the Beit HaMikdash a golden either leaf or grape or cluster of grapes, depending on how wealthy you are and how much you wanted to do. In other words, people could come and donate things and they would hang it there. You know what I was thinking right now? It just came to me. they have all these trees, and you know, like family trees, and people donate things in shuls, and they donate a like a leaf, right? So it's interesting. It kind of has the same. I wonder if somewhere, you know, it started connected to this at all. Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok, Maaseh haya v'nimnu aleha 300 kohanim lefanota. Okay, once they needed to move it, and they needed 300 kohanim to move it, that's how much gold there was there, okay? That's how many people brought stuff. So again, it's a guzma. Parochet, what's the guzma by the parochet? Ditnan, it says in the Mishnah, Rabban Shim ben Gamliel Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, this Mishum Rabbi Shimon Askan, I think it's a Mishnah in, oh no, it's a Mishnah in Shkalim. He said, Parochet ovya tefach. Okay, the parochet that covered the Kodesh Kodeshim, if you remember, there was a debate about whether there were one or two, okay, because there was this space in between, and some people say there were actually two there. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But the parochet, its thickness was a tefach. Al shiv'im u'shnayim nimim. There were 72, I forget the word they used to describe this, but the when you would weave, right, you would put the threads through through these nimim. Okay, there were 72 ne'ereget. Va'al kol nima u'nima 24 chutim. Right, what they say is there were 72 strands of yarn, and each strand was made up of 24 threads. Okay, so now, what were the 24 threads? If you remember, there was tchelet, argaman, tolat shani, right, there was the blue, the purple, the red dyed yarn, and then there was the pishtan, the flax. And each, so that's four. Each string, there were six strings of each, so that gets you to 24. And those 24, right, in other words, each strand was made, there were these 72 strands of thread, and each one was made from, there was 72, what would you call them? Yarn. And that yarn was made from 24, right? Each of those 72 were made from 24, you know, like 24 strings or strands of the wool and whatever, the wool and the flax. Or ka arba'im ama, b'rochba esrim ama. So the length of it was 40 ama by 20 ama, because the entrance was 20 ama, so it would cover the entrance. The height, 1 second. The entrance, no, I forget. The entrance was, maybe the height was 20 ama? Width was 20? No, the width of the entrance was 20, right, and the height was 40. Okay, that was the height of the entrance. Okay, so now, actually, now thinking, this was, it says it's into the sanctuary. What do they mean by the sanctuary? Is that the, oh no, it must be the Kodesh. It's the Kodesh, yeah, I assume that's what it is. Okay, so now, yeah, between, yeah, it's from the, it's to the Kodesh Kodeshim. Okay. Now, here comes the Guzma, you ready? If that wasn't right, that could be reasonable. But umishmonim ushtayim ribon aset. Okay, there's a few different interpretations of what this means. Either it means 82 ribo, which is ribo is 10,000, so 820,000 dinarim. Okay, it was made. The amount of money it cost to make this was 820,000 dinarim. That's some crazy amount of money. Some people say it was made by 82 ribo. Ribo are like maidservants. Remember, we saw like young girls. We saw the rovim for the young children. So it was young girls. Why young girls? Because they hadn't yet gotten their periods, so they were clearly tahorot. So you wanted only tahorah people to be dealing with this. So maybe it was made by 82, of, you know, girls. Or there's some other interpretations about what exactly it is, but we'll leave it at that. Hushtayim osim b'chol shana v'shana. They would make two every year. That some people say it's because, well, first of all, why two? Because there were the two. As I said, some people think there were actually two of these, or just because of the wear and tear of the ketoret, the smoke all the time was kind of ruining it, and they needed to replace it all the time. Ushlosh meot koanim matbilinota. Here comes the real exaggeration. If it was only made by 82 maidservants, well, that maybe is not so crazy. But shlosh meot koanim matbilinota, when they needed to tovel it, they needed 300 koanim to actually carry it to the mikvah. Okay, why would you need to tovel it? Some people say when you built it, like when you first created it, it needs tefillah before it can go up. Some people say it could be it got tameh along the way or something, and if you would need to, you would need 300 kohanim to dunk it. Hechelu ma'alim gzerin l'sederet ha'maracha. Continuing along, so now they start setting up the trees, right, the logs. Chutz mishal zayid and mishal gepin. So now we're going to figure out why. Hanei mai taima. So there's two possible reasons. Rav Papa amar mishum dekatre, the branches are interwoven, and because of that, they don't burn well. Okay, some people say just because they're, you know, tied, they're kind of tied up, they're intertwined, it's not a good way, they don't burn so well. Or some people say because the water, when they get wet, then the water stays in, it doesn't dry as well, and therefore they're not very dry, and therefore they're not going to burn so well. Rav Acha bar Yaakov amar mishum yishuv de'eretz Yisrael. Well, if we allow you to cut down, and this is saving the environment, right? Well, not exactly, because they're cutting other trees, but basically, if we allow you to cut all the olive and the right, think about what we need all the time. It's always tirosh and yitzar, right? The wine and the olive oil. Well, we don't want to be without those in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore we don't allow you to use them in the Beit HaMikdash. Otherwise, we'd have a shortage. Meitibe, now they're going to ask a question, one of the opinions. It says in the Braita, ala etzim asher ala esh, that's describing the Ma'aracha. Etzim hanituchim liyot esh, it's trees, wood that can burn very easily to turn into fire. Umaymihu, and what are those? Dokrei shipud de lokatre. They're straight like shipudim that aren't tied, intertwined. Va'azle miktar mitocho. And then they can burn from within. V'chi kol ha'etzim k'sherim l'maracha. So then they say, can all the trees, are they k'sherim l'maracha? They say, hey, yes, they are. Kol ha'etzim k'sherim chutz min tzayit v'gefen. This is just like our Mishnah, this part of it. And these small branches of teina, v'shele goes, v'shele
etchem. Why don't they mention that shiran that's totally forbidden?
Why would they mention? No, because that is forbidden for other reasons. The question is, when you go to say, okay, among all the permitted wood, what should you use? Don't use these and use those. Rabbi Eliezer Mosif, and here comes the problem, he adds the following. Af shomayish, which... What did they say it is? Mayish, I forgot. Afshamayish is hackberry tree. Okay, it doesn't mean so much to me. The hackberry tree, apparently it's used to kindle things. Vishal alon, the oak. Vishal dekel, the palm trees. Vishal charuv, carob trees. Vishal shikma, the sycamore trees. Okay, so Rabbi Eliezer adds the following. So it's clear Rabbi Eliezer and Tanakhama disagree about all those. So bishlama lamanda amar mishum dekatre baha kamiflege. Okay, if you say the whole issue is because they're intertwined, this is the machloka between them. Demar savar Tanakama holds afagav de lo katre mikavai kevan dekatre mibarai lo maitina. There's ones that are intertwined in the inner part of the tree, and there's ones that are intertwined in the outer part of the tree. So the ones listed here of the shikma and the dekel and the charuv that Rabbi Eliezer adds, the Tanakhama doesn't agree with, are intertwined outside on the outer part and not on the inner part. So Tanakhama says, I don't care that they're intertwined on the outer part, they're still intertwined and you can't use them. And Mar Savar, but Rabbi Eliezer holds, Kevan de lo katre mi gavai, afa gav de mi barai katre maitinan. He says, no, the fact that they're, it's only if they're intertwined on the inner part of the tree, not on the outer part of the tree, and therefore you can use these. So if there's a debate between them, that must be the debate about the intertwined. Ela lamanda amar mishum de yishuv de'eretz Yisrael. But if you say the whole issue is yishuv eretz Yisrael, that you shouldn't get rid of the gefen and the olive trees, dekel mi lepe mishum yishuv de'eretz Yisrael. But why would Rabbi Eliezer allow you to cut palm trees? Aren't dates also one of the shivat haminim that Eretz Yisrael is praised for? So you shouldn't be able to cut those either. So therefore, it's a question on the opinion of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why would he allow the dekel? So Amrei Lach, so what do they say? They could say to him is a question. In other words, they say, we're going to counter you with another question. B'litamech teina leipa mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But the teina, everyone agreed that you can use teina. Teina is also one of the shivat haminim. Figs also are on the list. So theoretically, they shouldn't allow you to cut fig trees either because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, what do they say? Lamayit lach lememar, b'teina d'lo avida pere. Te'akel nami b'delo avid pere. It must be that the only teina trees that they're allowing you to cut are teina trees that don't have actually figs on them. They're fig trees that are, okay, we're going to have to see it, and we'll get to it tomorrow, which is the next question, the Gemara, which is, are there really trees, fig trees, that don't have figs on them? In other words, what they're basically saying is, when we talk about the dekel and we talk about the teina, since if you're going to hold that the whole issue is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and that's why you can't use the gefen, the vines, the grapevines, and the olive trees, well then also you can't cut teina or dekel. So when they say that you could cut teina or dekel, they must mean as long as they have no fruits on them. Okay, which is interesting. Why didn't they then say about olive trees and grapevines that you can use them if they don't have any fruits on them?
I think the deco tree has a male and a female, and only one type of tree.
That's interesting.
Fruit,
not all of them.
That's totally
interesting. Right. So maybe that's why the Gemara specifically asks only about the Teina. That must be why they ask specifically about the fig tree and they don't ask about the deco. That explains why the Gemara would ask that question. I actually have a fig tree in my garden that doesn't have fruits. It kind of does, but they're never really good. Okay, so fine. We'll end here for today and we'll pick up tomorrow with, is there really such a thing as a fig tree that doesn't have fruits?